relationships, religion, reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Take no big thing to wear for the battery. Take no big thing the toll of the bell. I probated a spare for days. I troll downtown, the red light plays. Jump on bubble up, what's in store? Love is the drug and I need. Showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake free. Love is the drug, got a hook on me. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of.
Catching that buzz. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's hump day, Wednesday, July 25th, 2012, the only last Wednesday of July 2012 in the history of humanity.
Well, we're moving on.
In honor of the late, great Sherman Hemsley.
Don't burn on the grill. Took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill. Now we're up in the big leagues. Did not turn that back. As long as we live, it's you and me, baby.
Yeah, he moved up to the deluxe apartment in the sky. Sherman Hemsley, George Jefferson from the great show The Jeffersons from the 1970s passed away a couple days ago. And that was a spinoff of the All in the Family show, which is a classic here in the United States of America. But what a great show in its own right it was. A lot of groundbreaking stuff in that program. Just to have a black family featured in the United States of affluency. They had a interracial couple that was a major part of that program. Couple, actually. George Jefferson's kid, I think. His girlfriend was, I think, half white and half black. And then there was that British guy, remember, with his black wife, a British white guy. So it was that was a very important show. It was a well-done show. Sherman Hemsley, dead at the age of 74. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, on this excursion into all things good news, all things edifying, all things informative, inspirational. And the good news for Sherman Hemsley tonight is that, and for us, frankly, who were fans of his and that care about people in general, is that whatever heaven is, that is where he's at, being made one with God over 2,000 years ago. That's what we think. That's what we believe for all people, regardless of race, regardless of sex, regardless of faith, regardless of sexual orientation, regardless of national origin, regardless of lack of faith. Atheists get to go to heaven. There is no hell. It's going to be a major part of tonight's good news on Glenn Klein Online. Welcome you to join us tonight by giving us a buzz at 1-800-436-3260. We've got a special guest that we're going to be talking to this evening. Name of Kevin Miller, actually. you guys might be logging in to hear him specifically. Whether you are or not, if you have questions at all or comments about our topic this evening or anything else, the very lovely and talented Sean O'Halloran is spinning the dials, taking the calls, making this thing happen. Please say hello to the engineer, call screener, and producer of this here radio show, Mr. Sean O'Halloran. Seanage.
Hello.
How are you, handsome?
I'm doing pretty good these days.
Why is that, Sean?
I just started seeing somebody.
Oh, he's got a smile on his face when I walk into the studio. It just warms the cockles of my heart.
It's been long enough. It's been about a year or so.
You're off the schneid after a year?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you, dude. A year is a long time.
Yep.
I'll give you that. And yeah, you do. Yeah, got a little bit of rosiness in your cheeks.
Yeah, so. I'm a little picky though, so it takes a while before I can find someone to connect with.
You know what they say: to each his own or her own. This is Glenn Klein Online inviting you to call that man who is picky. He's not picky about answering the phone. He's picky about who he dates, if you will. That's Sean O'Halloran taking your calls worldwide at 813-425-5773, 813-425-5773, or anywhere in North America. The Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline is 1-800-436-3260. Before we get to Kevin Miller, we've got some family business to deal with. You guys that have been listening on Wednesday nights for a while, have often heard the incredible voice and insight of our dear friend and brother, Richard Mull. And as all of you know who have been listening to the show, Richard has been battling a host of cancers for a couple of years now. And he's in his final hours, you guys, on this planet. Mike Williams went out there. I actually talked to Mike about it. A couple of days ago, Mike went from Calgary, his meetings in Calgary, to right out to Southern California, just one day at home in Houston. And Richard is pretty much comatose at this point and is on his way out. And whatever is after we take our last breath, our friend and dear brother Richard is about to find out. And so wanted you guys to know that. We will keep you posted, of course. All of our love goes to Richard and his wife, Eva, and Michael, who's there, and Richard's family, who's gathered there in Southern California, our senior correspondent in SoCal, Richard Mull, about to join Sherman Hemsley in that deluxe apartment in the sky, whatever that is. And also, you guys that listened last week and, again, have listened to this radio show for a bit, know about our Facebook laureate, Girma Colston, who was on this show last week, sounding very strong in his baritone voice. And you also know that Girma went in for a battery of tests at the medical clinic there in Virginia. And I think the day after he was on the show, just a week ago, his doctors called him the next morning and said, get to the emergency room immediately. They were that concerned about Girma having a stroke or some sort of event. And so Girma did. And they have been doing an array of tests based on what they found initially. And as Girma has reported, as is his wont on Facebook, the reports have not been very good. They're talking about lymphoma. They're talking about terminal lymphoma, and I've been talking to him pretty much every day, been in touch with him, and again, lots of love, and just our hearts go out to our Girma Colston in Stafford, Virginia. So that's the family business, and you know, sometimes just life just sucks. I mean, it just, there's just no two ways about it.
Take the good with the bad.
Well, that's what we do. These are guys that you have spent a lot of time with talking on the phone. And I mean, you're the one that calls them or receives the calls. And you were the you're the gatekeeper of this thing. And this is not easy for people, for these two gentlemen in particular. I mean, we're far from burying Girma yet, but Richard is on his way out. What are your thoughts tonight, Sean?
I've just been pretty lucky in my life that I haven't had too many people that have been, you know, really sick or die or pretty much, you know, both my grandpas, but, you know, they were pretty old. And I had an uncle that had Lou Gehrig's disease, and that kind of, I think that was the worst thing, to see him deteriorate until he couldn't do anything. He couldn't move. Right.
All those things happened before you came into the understanding of everybody's righteousness and everybody's redemption in Christ, that everybody was indeed going to whatever peace with God in eternity is. How has your experience listening to the show and producing it over these last several years impacted your feelings about facing situations like your family or with Richard or potentially anybody else?
It's a little really, it's kind of mixed feelings, because you hate to have someone sick, or, you know, you hate to see anybody go, but at the same time, it's a little relief tucked back there that you don't have to worry about them.
You don't have to worry about their eternal destiny.
Yeah. It's kind of nice that somebody who can't talk or pray or do anything is already, you know, taken care of. He doesn't have to worry about trying to get into heaven when he can't even talk to pray or whatever.
It's a very good point. And that segues perfectly into our segment that we featured on the newsletter tonight. And, well, let us go to our guest. We're going to go across the border, north of the border. He's clearing his throat right now. Please welcome online from beautiful Abbotsford, British Columbia, Mr. Kevin Miller. Kevin!
Hey, great to be here.
Great to have you here. How are you this evening?
I couldn't be better. It's finally sunny, and we're finally getting the summer that you guys have been probably trying to get away from all summer.
No, bro, we live in Florida. It's summer here all the time. It actually,
there's no getting away from it.
I'm actually originally a Midwest boy, born and raised in Chicago, spent many moons in the great state of Wisconsin, not too far from the border there up during Canada.
That's right.
And I used to look down at the weather in Florida and places like Arizona and Southern California during the winter with such longing and such jealousy. And now, during the winter, I look up to that weather and see there's still snow. Pete, you know what? They still have that salt that goes on the roads, and it just makes that snow look gray. And when you live in Florida, and when you live in sunny and warm climates, you forget that people are actually still suffering with winter. But the exciting thing for us in Florida right now, where the temperatures are in the, you know, upper 80s, lower 90s, very, you know, nice hot humidity, very tropical, it's warmer in places like Chicago and Cincinnati and St. Louis than it is here in Florida. I love that, Kevin.
Yeah, well, we were just down south of Chicago, and it was probably about 104 degrees every day. We were out at something called the Cornerstone Festival, and let me tell you, they're feeling it.
A buck 4. Where is that in Illinois? That's a well-known Christian festival at Cornerstone, right?
Yeah, actually, it was the last year for it, too. It was a little town called Bushnell.
Bushnell?
Probably about 3.5 hours south of Chicago.
Well, sometime we're going to have to hook you up with the Socrates of the gospel, which is Scott Johnson, who now lives in Anchorage. And he and his brother David did some raiding of that festival, the Cornerstone Festival. It's a great story. The people that are familiar with the show, it's an amazing story, what these guys did after they realized that there was no hell, that God was no longer angry with the human race. They went down to that Cornerstone Festival and made sure that the thousands of people gathered there knew that God was no longer angry with them, and that Christianity had really messed it up big time.
I can imagine.
So what were you doing down there with your Hellbound movie?
Well, we have a big black tent that says Hellbound all over it, and we've been going to a number of different festivals across the country all summer long promoting the film. So we're standing there in the hot, dusty place, having hundreds of people come by our booth, and you know, the cool thing about Cornerstone in particular is that you never know who's going to walk in. You've got Orthodox priests, you've got metalheads and kids with their ears stretched, you know, 2 inches wide. and probably the worst collection of tattoos I've ever seen in one place. But yeah, so it was really fascinating, though. We've been all over the place at all different kinds of festivals and engaging with hundreds of people, just letting them know about Hellbound and inviting them to come out and see it this fall.
By saying the worst collection of tattoos, do you mean just a general massive collection of tattoos, or tattoos that are really particularly bad?
Yeah, both. I would say that there's probably more tattoos per square foot at Cornerstone than I've probably ever seen anywhere. And
were they bad tattoos? Is that are you?
Yeah. Oh, they were bad and badly placed by and large. Like I actually started taking pictures of some of them. They were so bad, just because, you know, I think that what's going on again, because this is a largely an evangelical crowd, and I think what's happening is, you know, I think it's just a very typical coming of age thing that. You know, 20 years ago, it was pretty risque for a Christian to get a tattoo, an evangelical Christian. And so I think what ends up happening is that, in a sense, it's almost like saying that it's okay to do this. You're sort of saying it's okay to be cool or something. So people go way overboard. They overcompensate for having felt sort of out of it as Christians. And so they get way too many tattoos, and I've never gotten a tattoo, partly because I can never figure out what it is I want to have in my body for the rest of my life. And I wish some of these people maybe would have put a bit more thought into it. I think they're going to feel the same way in a few years.
Well, Kevin, I have to admit to you and to all the radio listeners around the planet that I have a tattoo.
I have nothing wrong with tattoos. I love tattoo art. It's just, you'd have to see some of them.
No, I can imagine. And I've seen some pretty funny and hideous ones. Another man, a great man, an author, is online with us right now. He's going to join in the conversation. Please welcome online the medicine man of the good news. Please say hello from the great state of Wisconsin, Mr. Pep Washburn. Pepe!
How?
How, buddy? Say hello to Kevin Miller.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good to meet you.
I just heard you commenting on the heat in Illinois and a little while ago, and the subject tonight, of course, is hell.
You know, it occurred to me that the folks in Cornerstone, especially the evangelicals, must have used that heat, Kevin, to their advantage with their message of a place that God sends everybody to burn forever if they don't like God.
Well, you know, I didn't run into that message very much at Cornerstone. I have to say that there definitely was, you know, every festival we go to, except for Wild Goose, that one's a totally different one. There's certain people that come up to us and are concerned for our salvation, and that happened at Cornerstone, but that was by far the exception. I think that Cornerstone, to me, actually was one of the, I felt it was actually a very healthy environment overall. So I didn't feel that the main message, the main reason it was there was to share the fire and brimstone message. I didn't feel that at all.
Well, that begs the question of what is Wild Goose? I mean, that sounds like a more fun than Cornerstone, I got to admit.
Well, the Wild Goose Festival just was in its second year this year. It's in Shikori Hills, North Carolina. They're actually doing a West Coast version on Labor Day weekend just outside of Portland. But it's a gathering, again, around music, justice, and faith. And you get a really wide range of speakers there. I heard, Jim Wallace, Phyllis Tickle, Shane Claiborne, Frank Schaefer, Brian McLaren, a whole bunch of interesting folks. I have to say, Michael Harden was another one from Preaching Peace. It was definitely, three of the best days I've spent all year.
Well, I was going to say, if they have Frank Schaefer there, they're fairly up. You know, Pep, this is Kevin's first venture here on this radio program, and I have not even introduced him properly. May I do that, please, gentlemen?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I've got this great bio, and I actually do radio, but I have to admit, I was overcome by the thought of tattoos, so you'll have to bear with. Kevin Miller is an award-winning filmmaker who has applied his craft to documentaries, feature films, and short film projects. Recent credits include Spoiled, Sex Plus Money, Drop Gun, No Saints for Sinners, With God on Our Side, and Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. Never one to shy away from controversial material, Kevin's latest film is a feature-length documentary called Hellbound, which asks some critical questions about the traditional, and I lost my place, about the traditional doctrine of hell. Kevin's work has taken him to cover taken them to over a dozen countries across five continents. In addition to making films, Kevin teaches screenwriting at a number of film schools and conferences across North America and around the world. Kevin lives in Abbotsford, British Columbia, with his wife and four children. Now, please properly say hello to Kevin Miller. Thank you, Kevin. All right, so, dude, here's the thing. This is a legitimate movie, you guys. This is a trailer. I mean, this is a movie that's going to be rolled out and have, what do they call those things? Premieres. And, like, Kevin, you get red carpets and stuff?
You know what? We're not going to have a big red carpet premiere. We're just going to spend that money opening in more cities, to be honest. We're going to have a little bit of a party, but, you know, I think that it's a little bit indulgent to do something like that on a film of this nature.
Oh, bro, you got...
I'd like to ask, when's the first day? When does debut?
We're doing a one-night sneak preview in Nashville on September 12th, and then we're going to roll out in New York City, Dallas, and Minneapolis on the 21st of September, and then continue rolling out in 3 to 5 cities each week after that. So we're opening... Pardon me?
How about Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Bible Belt Buckle?
I'd have to look at that. We're actually going to be putting all of our screening dates on the website basically within a week from now. And we're opening simultaneously in Canada and the USA.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
Well, you guys, we have the trailer here for you to listen to. Now, obviously, this is a movie. This is something to be viewed as well as listened to. But I had to say that, I mean, the trailer is amazing. And it is well worth listening to on the radio. And then, of course, you can go to Kevin's website at hellboundthemovie.com. But we're going to be talking a lot about the movie. But let's just check out this 2-minute trailer, and you're going to enjoy that. This is the trailer from the movie Hellbound.
Go. Have you ever lied before? Then you're a liar. You just qualified yourself to go to hell.
Welcome to hell.
If you believe in God, you have to believe in hell.
The suffering is beyond human imagination.
Weeping, gnashing of teeth, wailing, outer darkness, and there is no second chance after death.
But God loves everybody. No.
Traditional views of hell make God look like a mean tyrant, hell-bent on retributive justice.
God is holding the guilty sinner like a spider over a fire. And God is angry at the spider.
And I think what we're trying to say to your question about hell and all these other things is, who is this God? Because if you get that wrong, everything's wrong.
Jesus, I have a question for you. Is anybody going to hell?
We'll let him think so, and maybe it'll help him act better.
Our whole theological system has been boiled down to a hell avoidance plan.
The whole concept of hell is really used to terrorize people into the faith.
How do I get you to do what I want you to do? Well, if you don't conform, don't worry just about what I'll do to you in this lifetime. God hates you too, and he'll punish you, wait a minute, how long? Forever.
People are afraid that if you rethink hell, the whole system will come crumbling down.
If we remove God's wrath against sinners, Christianity starts to not make sense.
So you base the entire religion on fear of hell, fear of punishment, fear of God's wrath, and what happens to the gospel where it teaches you not to fear?
This is Glenn Klein online. That is the trailer from Hellbound? We're talking with the producer and director of Hellbound, the creator of Hellbound, Mr. Kevin Miller. And also, the medicine man, the author, Pep, I have to apologize to you with all sincerity because you did send me a pronunciation key of your book, but it's mini Menominiki. No. What is it?
Menominiki.
And the subtitle?
Well, the title is Touching Spirit, the Letters of Menominiki.
I'll get it down. I kind of have it down. Menominiki. Vance, who's also online with us, and we're so happy to have both gentlemen. We've got another line available for you guys if you've got questions, comments, insight. 1-800-436-3260, 800-436-3260, or worldwide at 813-425-5773. Kevin, what made you make that movie?
Well, you know, I became a Christian when I was 9 years old, I remember that summer. I grew up on a farm in Saskatchewan in Canada. I remember walking out onto my driveway and looking at my family who were working in the garden that evening and just having this sinking pit in my stomach when I realized that if they didn't know what I know, what I had learned that summer at Bible camp, they were all going to go to hell. I understand that I became a Christian at a Bible camp that was run by evangelical Christians, and at the time, my parents kind of made fun of those folks. My dad, he would sort of take joy out of the fact that he could rev up his tractor and go work his fields on Sunday when the Mennonite Christians around him couldn't. And so the last thing I was going to do as a nine-year-old kid was admit to my parents that I was now one of these people. So here I am worried that my family's all going to go to hell, but I'm too afraid to tell them what I know. And so I think that the way I describe it is that when I became a Christian, it was a really good thing that happened. But I think along with it, there was almost, you could describe it as a parasite of fear. And I think what ends up happening with a lot of people who become Christians the way I did is that that parasite of fear, at a certain point, it threatens to overwhelm the host. And so what do you do? Some people just simply walk away. They say, I just can't resolve the idea of a loving God and with the idea that perhaps the majority of humanity is going to end up in hell. So they just walk away from Christianity. Other people, I think, just sort of tuck it away and say, you know what, I can't figure it out, but people tell me it's true, so I guess I'm just going to live with it. In my case, I've always been somewhat of an armchair theologian and philosopher, and not just an armchair one. I went off and got a degree in biblical studies and also went on to do some work at seminary and that sort of thing. And so it's been, you know, one of the these sorts of questions really gnaw at my soul. And so what really precipitated this film was about 4 years ago, I edited a book for a friend of mine called Her Gates Will Never Be Shut, Hope, Hell, and the New Jerusalem. It's by a guy named Brad Jersak. And Brad did a really simple thing in the book. What he did was he went through all of the terms in the Bible that are typically translated as hell. Because anyone who begins to even study this topic, well, the first thing they realize is that the word hell isn't in the Bible. So there's,
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now, we have people that are very biblically literate and have read the Bible. The word hell appears in the Bible.
In the translations of the Bible.
In the translations of the Bible. You're saying that the King James Bible is not been inspired in its translation. Is that what you're trying to say, Kevin Miller?
I hate to break it to you, but
damn you,
yeah.
Damn you, man.
Well, and see, this is the problem: is that hell becomes it becomes a catch-all for phrases in the Old Testament or words in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And so, the fact that the King James Version, in particular, but not just the King James, other translations as well. They substituted the word hell for a Hebrew word like Sheol in the Old Testament, which is essentially the place of the dead or the grave, which is where everyone ends up. In the New Testament, you'll find Jesus using a word, Gehenna, in the Gospel. So whenever you see Jesus, whenever you see him and it's translated as hell in the red letters of the text, you can probably look in your footnotes and see it's actually Gehenna, which is literally a place also called the Valley of Hinnom or the Valley of Sons of Hinnom outside of Jerusalem, which has a rich prophetic history going back to particularly to Jeremiah. Then you're also going to see in the New Testament.
All right, time out.
Yep.
Time out.
Yep.
Have you been there, my friend?
I have not stood in Gehenna.
I've been to hell, dude.
Yeah.
I have been to Gehenna. It's really nice.
I would actually buy some real estate there.
No, I'm telling you, bro. It's right outside the old city, and the Israelis have done quite a nice job of landscape. It's basically a nature preserve.
Yeah.
It's very nice. But as you said, there is a history of hell or Gehenna that Yeshua, I like to refer to Jesus by his actual name. I think that's kind of respectful. It'd be like, yeah. I mean, it'd be like calling you George when your name is Kevin. I mean, it's, I just do out of respect, I call him Joshua, or in his Hebrew, Yeshua. But Jesus, Yeshua, he was talking about a specific place, as you said, with a specific geographical history behind it.
That's right. Now, this, and so, yeah, and I think that, that geographical history needs to be investigated. If you're going to try and understand why Jesus would use a term like that, I think you need to understand that history. And this is where I think people begin to go astray, in that they'll basically say, well, I do understand that history, and Jesus is trying to say, well, yeah, what's going to happen after you die is going to be way worse than what Jeremiah predicted, for instance, which would be that the valley would be piled so high with bodies that, you know, you would have to burn them and just to get rid of them all. And so, yeah, so what you see in the New Testament also is Greek terms, right? You'll see Tartarus, which is supposedly the place where the Titans are chained awaiting judgment. And then you'll also see Hades, which is, again, it's not a necessarily a place of punishment, but within Greek mythology, it's the place where everyone who dies goes. Of course, there's better and worse places to be in Hades. So, yeah, hell, just to get back to what inspired me to make the film is that this simple realization, this simple defining of terms, what ends up happening when you just go and do that, never mind the images of judgment like the lake of fire and that sort of, simply defining terms, understanding them in their historical literary context, you realize that most of what you think you know about hell doesn't come from the Bible. And that should cause anybody to stop and take a second look.
Especially if they have some level of respect for the Bible.
Yeah. Exactly, because this is really Brad's argument in Her Gates Will Never Be Shut, because he comes from a strict, Baptist, very literal read of the scripture background, which he has been basically spending the last, 22 or 3 decades coming out of. So he's turning around speaking back to those people and saying, look, if we're going to be biblical about hell, let's be biblical. But there's a problem when you want to be biblical. And the problem is that the Bible does not just say one thing. The authors of the Bible are not unified in terms of describing the fate of people after they die. So the Bible, you could say, is polyphonic. There's a polyphony of voices, and there's a tension, right? And I think we all, anyone who's at least somewhat sophisticated in terms of their reading of the Bible recognizes this. So the question is, what do you do with that? And I think if you're a Jew, you're fine with that, because this is a Jewish way of dealing with these types of theological issues, is to hold things in tension, is to say, look, there's a contradiction here. We're going to have to learn to live with that, but what can we learn in the midst of it? Whereas I think that the Christian perspective, particularly evangelical Christian perspective, is to say, no, we have to harmonize all of this. We have to take all these pieces in the puzzle and make them fit.
Well, not only do we have to harmonize it, but it's already been harmonized for us. How many times, you guys, have you heard Christian ministers from Christian pulpits say there are absolutely no contradictions in the Bible? That is bullshit. Only one or two things are happening there. Either that particular teacher is completely and utter deceived, or he or she is a liar. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is the good news on Glenn Klein Wednesday night. We've got Kevin Miller from the great nation of Canada. You know what a Canadian's hell is, right?
Toronto?
that is not what I was going to say. I was going to say not winning the Stanley Cup since 1994. And that's the truth, ladies. The entire nation of Canada is in a living hell because they have not taken home the cup since that happened, 20 years ago, thereabouts.
Well, and Vancouver descended into almost a literal hell last year when we were one game away.
They
from
sure did. They sure did. But one of the great pictures ever was taken when that couple was making love in the midst of the ride, and somebody took that picture. If you guys want to, if you want to see the most amazing picture ever, this was the riot that occurred after the Vancouver Canucks lost the Stanley Cup. 2 years ago. And this couple just decided in the midst of this chaos that they were going to make love in the middle of all this, and that their image was caught by accident because a photographer from one of the news agencies was just taking pictures, and then they saw what is going on here. And the funny thing about that was that the guy's father saw the picture and said, that's my kid. He just knew. He's just knew that that's my kid. And I'd be proud to have my son do that.
Doesn't surprise me.
Are you saying that? Are you planning on doing something, Sean, at the Republican National Convention in Tampa this next month?
I can't disclose my plans for
that. You cannot either confirm nor deny?
Correct.
Well, we can confirm that we have Kevin Miller online with us, as well as Pep Washburn. Kevin, what is your title with this movie? When the credits scroll at the beginning or the end of the film, what is it going to say about you?
It's going to say written and directed by Kevin Miller, and I co-produced it with Dave Rempel. So just call me the filmmaker.
You are the man. That's what we're going to call you. You are the man. And we've also got Pep Washburn, author and friend of humanity, the medicine man of the good news, from calling from central Wisconsin. Pep, how thrilled are you to hear Kevin talk this way?
This is fantastic. I'm going to make a comment here, and then I'm going to hang up because my wife is giving me evil eyes. I have to get out and water our plant.
Oh.
So here's my comment. It seems as though, concerning this issue of hell, that for many Christians, the idea of salvation and even redemption loses its value if they realize there's not a hell. That heaven itself, the value of heaven, is maintained by having its opposite, a hell. And I thought that possibly Kevin might want to comment about that.
I think that's an excellent observation, because this is something I've run into over and over again, especially when I've gone around to these Christian festivals, is almost a snide question of, well, if there's no hell, why did Jesus have to die? Or why be a Christian? You know, if there's no hell, what's this all about? And, you know, it's, to me, I feel what that points to is, you know, something I would just say very negative in terms of, you know, all kinds of things in terms of psychology and theology. Because I think what, as Richard Beck, he has a fantastic blog called Experimental Theology, says, he says, you know, the problem with Protestants is that they're more concerned about avoiding punishment than they are about living holy lives. And so when it comes even to this discussion of hell, I think that part of the problem I feel with the discussion is, if you believe in eternal torment, or if you believe in annihilation, the idea that people don't suffer forever in hell, they're actually somehow terminated, or even if you believe in a certain type of universalism, so often the discussion revolves around crime and punishment. And so if Jesus didn't die to save us from hell, why the hell did he die? You know, to put it that way. And so the thing I always say to people is, well, what else do you think we might need saving from? And all I need to do is look around at the world and say, look it, we're literally going to hell in a handbasket here in terms of, you know, if you just want to look at the shooting that happened in Aurora, you know, that's the exception, of course, but we are a world at war with ourselves. And I believe that Jesus came to show us why we're in this situation, and then to show us the only way out of it.
That's
and
awesome.
I think ultimately the only path out is going to be the defeat of death and the resurrection, because I think that behind all of this stuff that we're doing to ourselves is this deep-seated anxiety about death. And that this is the major predicament of humankind. I don't think the major predicament of humankind is that we've pissed off God, to put it in Glenn Klein terms.
Wait, hold on for a second, damn it.
I agree.
Hold on for a second. You just met me this week, Kevin Miller. You can't put that on me. God damn it.
Yeah, I've looked at your Facebook page.
All right, fair enough. Kevin, we got to let Pep go. Can you hang on for a few minutes?
I'm going to sign off.
All right, Pepe, go water your plants. Go do your medicine man thing. We love you.
Hey, I'll listen to the rest of this webcast here online, but I tell you what, this is a guy I'm going to stop in and visit next time up in British Columbia.
Yeah, you get up there,
which
don't you?
May happen next May.
All right.
See you then, Kevin.
Hey, the door's open.
All right, there goes Pep Washburn, and we're going to be back. Kevin just opened up a huge topic when we return right here. The good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Long, hard ride, Chicago to St. Louis town, yeah, that there's more my style. said, bend the road, boys, I'm blind. I got the double vision, got a troubled mind. Won't be long before you find me southbound. I'm southbound, southbound, old road, don't you get me down. Got on board a winged prayer, I'm passing through this town. Get to where I'm going by the break of day. Hey, hey, you're not quite certain, can't really say. Ain't hard to see, the road's one way and it's southbound.
Welcome back in the Good News on Glenn Klein for this Wednesday night. Our special guest is Kevin Miller, who's an award-winning filmmaker and has applied his craft to documentaries, feature films, and short film projects, including the soon-to-be-released feature-length documentary called Hellbound. Not Southbound. That was our good friends, the Yonder Mountain String Band, with Southbound. But you got Hellbound, Kevin, with a question mark. Why'd you put a question mark at the end of that?
Well, you know, really the title is about a bunch of different things. Number one being, is anybody hellbound? And if so, who? And why? And the other question I would have behind it is, why are we so bound to this notion of hell? Why do we really need it? Because I think that on one sense, we do need the language of hell. Because as Richard Beck says, I referenced him before, experimentaltheology.com, is that if we don't have the language of hell for an event like 9/11, we are left with basically the language of psychology and politics, and that just doesn't seem to be sufficient. So I think somewhere in the human psyche, this idea of justice, of post-mortem justice, the idea of all things being made right is necessary. And so I think that we are bound, like it or not, we're bound to the idea of hell. And I think on the third level, I would ask, you know, are there certain versions of hell which need to be bound, which need to be basically set aside for good because they're ultimately doing more harm than good?
Wow. That's all I have to say about that little monologue. Why do we need a vocabulary of hell for a 9/11?
Well, again, I think it comes out in the language that people use to describe it. How many times would you hear somebody say that it was like hell on earth? When that shooting happened in Norway on the island where the killer went into the camp of the political party and killed dozens of young people, right away, the language of hell is invoked to try and seek to describe the enormity of the horror. And so I think this is the type of thing that in our psyche, at a very gut level, we grasp for this type of language in order to describe how we feel about these sorts of events.
Yeah, but I might make the argument, in fact, I will make the argument,
yeah,
that is speaks to the level of influence that this insanity called evangelical Christianity has had on our society.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, that it does become maybe the most accessible narrative to pin it on. But it does seem, I think what it does is, as Beck says, it takes us beyond psychology and politics to say that there's something wrong at the heart of the universe, like that this speaks to, you know, at the spiritual level, something has gone deeply awry, and we just need some way of describing that. And so I agree. I mean, I think we're inundated with this, and not just from the church, but of course popular culture has picked this up in all kinds of ways, this type of really garish hellish
imagery. Right, because I would make the argument, as many of our compatriots would as well, that is because of the influence of Christianity. And
yeah,
and that, as Mike Williams said so brilliantly a couple of months ago, that literally guilt and judgment has been institutionalized in our society to the point where even people that don't believe in God often go to guilt and judgment to condemn other people for
yeah,
their actions and call people guilty and cheaters and sinners even. Even though that they don't believe in a God at all, let alone a God that's about to vengefully and wrathfully judge the entire planet.
I think you're right. And every culture has its meta-narrative, right? It's grand story that somehow makes sense of the world. So whether you're an atheist who doesn't buy into it at all or a Christian who does, we've all been inundated with it.
No doubt.
But I think you're pointing to something really interesting. And again, this is where you know, looking at different perspectives is so helpful, because René Girard, who he's still alive today, and he's one of the, you know, one of the last great meta theorists, I think, who's trying to come up in a sense with an all-encompassing explanation for human behavior. And he really has done a lot of work on something called mimetic theory or scapegoating theory. And this is the idea that we bring about order in society by basically scapegoating individuals or groups. So rather than go to rather than devolve into a war of all, we bring about peace by targeting somebody and venting all of our aggression onto them. And I think that, you know, you're right, and Mike Williams is right, is that we've built a whole culture around pointing the finger, and that even our whole judicial system is really very much focused on blaming individuals for societal problems. And so when I look at criminals, you know, of course, when somebody acts out in a way that James Egan Holmes did in Aurora, Colorado last week, I mean, clearly this is a horrific act perpetuated by an individual, and you could call him a lone gunman. And I think that we all feel really good pointing the finger at this guy, and I've seen it happen all over the internet, is that people are going to use this guy to explain all kinds of
right
moral breakdowns in society. But I hear very few people turning back on themselves and saying, oh my gosh, what have we done? How did we allow this to happen? How did, you know, that we treat it as if it's an individual who's gone defective, as opposed to somebody who is symptomatic of a very sick society. And, you know, and that we should be looking at ourselves, I think, in the midst of this, not being so eager to point the finger at other people.
This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Kevin Miller, the writer and director and the co-producer of Hellbound. I'm going to challenge you a little bit here, my friend.
I figured you would.
Yeah, with this. Because I think that the incredible age of technology and information that we live in, and your study and your life's work that has allowed you to produce what, just based on the trailer, and you guys have got to go to Hellbound. It's hellboundthemovie.com, right, Kevin?
That's right. Actually, we just had a new theatrical trailer go up on Apple Trailers yesterday.
Okay. So anyway, just check it out. YouTube it. Google it. It's fantastic. I mean, you can tell what a fantastic, an amazing work this is going to be. The age that we live in that has allowed you to produce this amazing work that is about to be sprung on the planet in early fall is the same time of human history, the same information age, the same technology that allows us to know instantaneously what happens in Aurora, Colorado, or in New York City on September 11th, 2001, or in Afghanistan, for that matter, or China, or Mexico, or Japan, or Canada. It doesn't make a difference where. I will make the argument that things are not getting progressively worse, that our society is not near as ill as we think it is, because the information is so readily available. We do know statistically, for example, that there is less slavery right now that is going on the planet Earth that has ever gone on in the history of this planet. Since in recorded history, we know that there are less people dying of warfare right now. As horrific as the stuff is going on right now that we're aware of, there are less people dying of warfare right now on the planet since recorded history.
Yeah,
that's incredible, you guys. We know, for example, that in places like Canada and the United States and Western civilization, that like women have equal rights and stuff. People that have more melanin in their skin are considered equal. That people of a gay or lesbian or transgender or bisexual nature are considered equal in many places, even in some places in the United States of America. Kevin, these things are positive trends, bro.
I agree. And again, I maybe sounded a little too pessimistic, but here's what I'm saying is that I think that the problem I see is that in terms of, I think individualism, this really relates back to hell, I think, and this is, again, I think part of the residual nature of evangelical Christianity, is that individualism is, I think, really the sign of our age. The notion that what is everyone's ultimate goal is to basically be completely autonomous and to, you know, in a sense, see oneself as a completely free moral agent in society. And so when somebody commits a crime, we really heap a lot of blame onto them because we see them as that, as opposed to really going at things from a communal point of view, which is, I think, is a much more biblical point of view, to realize that we actually are far more interrelated in terms of the choices that we make and the actions that we take, in terms of the way that we influence each other. And so when somebody acts out in a really negative way, we all tend to draw back and say, oh my gosh, what a horrible person.
Right.
As opposed to say, wait a second, we're all part of a big family here. What went wrong?
Well, the carnage that was out there in the theater in Aurora is unbelievable. But the fact of the matter is, in my hometown, Chicago, there's that many young people that die every single weekend.
Yeah.
From gun violence. And you never hear about it in the nationals. Why? Because it's not in a nice suburb. It's not in a movie theater. It's not in a movie premiere. It's just, you know, it's sporadic violence. And the fact of the matter is, but I mean, dead is dead, bro.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't mean to treat that one any differently. It just happens to be one that people can identify with. But I think to speak to the broader point, you know, in terms of, you know, you sound pretty optimistic about where we're headed. And I ultimately am an optimist as well. Like, I worked on this movie called Spoiled, which actually takes a very optimistic view toward our energy use and fossil fuels in particular, because I have a high degree of confidence in the ingenuity of humankind, just because we've demonstrated it over and over and over again. Whereas I see much of the environmentalist movement actually having a very pessimistic view of humankind. And
yes, the environmentalist movement is, they are kissing cousins to the Last Days movement in evangelical Christianity. They're both saying we're not going to survive. The planet is not going to survive.
And I would look at it this way. I think that humanity is just beginning to become interesting, and I think that we haven't even begun, you know, really as a species. I think that we're very barely getting started, and so I'm optimistic too. And I think, you know, Brian McLaren in his book A New Kind of Christianity, I think, draws this out really well. Is that for many people, it does seem like the world is getting worse, because as our capacity to do good things increases, there's always going to be a downside of progress. You know, and it's very simple in, you know, this recent Batman movie, to go back there, is on the upside, they've got this new fusion reactor that could be this great form of energy. But once you develop nuclear power, then you can have nuclear bombs. And so it seems like the world's getting worse, because our capacity, our potential to do things is just getting greater. And so when we slip up, the effects are greater. I would say, you know, the other thing, I think that this is the positive side of Christianity, even evangelical Christianity, is that, as my friend Frank Schaefer pointed out the other day, is that the fact that even a country like China, for instance, seeks to cover up human rights abuses, and we don't blatantly abuse people anymore in public. We don't blatantly enslave. We don't, you know, blatantly.
Unless you're in Iran, then you cut off people's hands.
There's, of course, there's always going to be pockets, right? But, you know, I think that there's a sense of what's right, and that we've all been inculcated with it, and that I think that's a sign of progress. You don't have to go back very far to see where all kinds of abuses, I mean, even in the United States of America, where racism is rampant and people are completely unrepentant about it. So the fact that even though it still happens, but that people now have to keep it undercover, I say is progress, because it shows that their conscience have been impacted.
Right. We still, of course, I know you guys don't execute prisoners, but of course we do. Here in the United States. But there was a great tradition in this country of executing people publicly. I mean, it was like a big old social event.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore.
Well, not only do you not do it anymore, how many states are getting rid of the death penalty or have gotten rid of it?
Thank God. Listen, we're running out of time, but I got to get back to your point before we went to the break about overcoming death through the resurrection. You guys that have listened to this program and, of course, the Gospel Revolution webcast, we have dealt with this kind of stuff for 7 years and these topics and stuff. We're so excited to have new listeners tonight because we've got Kevin online, and that's one of the reasons we're excited about this new program. What do you mean, Kevin Miller, when you talk about victory over death and the resurrection?
Well, I'm really influenced by a guy named Ernest Becker. Ernest Becker is probably best known for his book, The Denial of Death. And he was a student of Freud who basically, like many of Freud's students, departed from him on many levels. But what he came to recognize is that where Freud believed that the central repression, the central problem of humankind is our anxiety about sex. Becker said, no, that might have been Freud's problem, but he feels that the problem of humankind as a whole is our anxiety about death, and that our fear of death is really the driver of all human behavior, both good and bad, and that what we tend to do is we develop immortality formulas or immortality systems that will allow us to somehow transcend death, either figuratively or literally.
Right.
So, you know, a pharaoh is going to build a pyramid and all kinds of structures and put his name everywhere. Why? So that he won't be forgotten. Because none of us want to be forgotten. We all want to somehow live on.
Right.
And so I think that it can produce good things, but I think also...
All right. Okay, I hear that. We've got like 2 minutes left.
Okay, it can produce very negative things. So,
how do you overcome that?
Well, I think it's number one, we have to come back to the resurrection. This is where I go, look at Christians, you're all worried about offending a God, you know, with your behavior. And I think that what God is trying to say and what Jesus is trying to demonstrate with his life is, look at the problem is death and your fear of death. So I'm going to solve that problem. I'm going to defeat death. And so this is really the question I throw out to Christians these days, is to say, look, can you actually live in the light of that, or are you going to continue living under the shadow of death? And I would see so much of Christianity as something that doesn't confront death the way I think you should be confronting it, but runs from death. And so we build institutions that become a bulwark against death rather than, in a sense, dying to ourselves the way Christ calls us to so that he might raise us up again.
Thanks, dude. Can we carry on this conversation?
Yeah, definitely.
Will you come back between now and your premiere and then after?
I'd love to.
We've been honored to have Kevin Miller, the creator, the writer, the director, the co-producer of the upcoming movie Hellbound. Go to hellboundthemovie.com. This is going to be a major deal, you guys. You know we've been involved, that we are involved in seeing organized religion, legalism, division, things that separate people from each other and from themselves. We want to see this mindset defeated once and for all. It's not going to happen in our lifetime, but we're part of the process. So is Kevin Miller. And Kevin, I cannot thank you enough for doing what you've done and for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much, Glenn. It's one of the quickest hours I've ever gone through. It's been fun.
Are you married, bro?
I am.
But don't tell your wife that, okay? No, it was awesome. It seemed like about 10 minutes, and we're going to do it again soon. So, and we are going to be pumping and promoting Hellbound. I guarantee you that, my friend.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, there he goes, Kevin Miller, the producer, creator, writer, director of Hellbound. Go to hellboundthemovie.com. Want to thank Kevin. Want to thank you guys for listening. Pep Washburn for the great state of Wisconsin for calling in as well. Hope his plants got watered. And Seanage, thank you so much. And that was some good stuff, dude.
Yeah. I'm a man of few words.
Sometimes, and we appreciate you so much. You guys, let us hear from you this week. Recommend GlennKleinOnline.com to your friends for the newsletter and this here radio show. Until next time, this would be Glenn Klein Online saying... Shalom, everybody!